You should be warned, the upcoming episode will be full of unfiltered, off-the-cuff discussion. As such, you should consider this your spoiler warning.
Hello, my name is Kyle.
My name is Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form Experience Grind Podcast. We're not the only podcast with two or three white guys talking about stupid bullshit that doesn't matter, but we're not the worst. There's some weird inflection going on there. I'm trying different things out. It's getting there.
I think it works. I just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was expecting the mess up too.
Surprise, listeners. This is the second run at it. The first run I thought had way better energy, but what do I know? I just do what sound engineer Andrew tells me to do.
And plus, it was a godcast and not podcast.
I know, man. What would a godcast be? Like, what? Like, it, would it be like the Pope's podcast?
Wasn't that technically the Bible?
Is that?
I like to think it's God just watching reruns of Frasier and commenting.
Now that I would listen to.
He just records commentary for every episode of
Frasier. Who do you think God's favorite character would be?
It's definitely Niles.
You think Niles?
Totally God Niles. Is a Niles man.
I think Eddie.
The dog?
Yeah.
Because
the dog.
I can see that.
He's almost transcendent.
Transcendent we live through or Eddie. Like really, really base. And like that's God's level of humor.
That's true too. Like, that's true too.
I appreciate the dog. I appreciate Kramer. That is all.
I love how sophisticated and uptight your version of God sounds.
Well, I'm still going with that Niles God, right?
That's true. If he is a giant fan of Frasier, God's got to be a little uptight.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, hi, everybody. We're already going off track here. Gotta love that. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about 1982's The Thing by John Carpenter. This is the third episode in our Halloween special. We're joined again by our lovely friend, Brooks, who has been, he was here for American Werewolf. He was on Diablo 2. And a still as yet unreleased episode, which may happen at some time before this podcast ends. But we don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
We don't know.
All I know is that we filmed some stuff and we did some audio to that and I've heard nothing about it.
Yeah.
And then we referenced that also in the Diablo podcast.
Yep, we sure did.
And people are probably like, did we miss something? What's going on here?
Diablo was our highest rated episode for a while.
Yeah.
It has finally been dethroned, according to Ryan, who gave
number
me some,
three now.
Some metrics. But it's still up there. It's in the top five. Top five dead or alive. Can't knock that.
So, Ryan, I just got this question. What's number one right now?
I knew you were going to ask as soon as it got brought up. And I think
that's why I was trying to.
Do you have it on your phone? Because I sent them to you.
Yeah.
It is.
I can check.
Half-Baked is number two.
Stretch.
And it was like by like a very, very thin margin. And then, no. It was Drunkcast. Drunkcast is number two by
that's
a thin
right.
margin. Half-Baked is by a landslide number one now.
Yeah, Half-Baked was huge. Mm-hmm. So
I'm going to go on a record saying that the Diablo 2 podcast would have been better if we had video at that time.
Maybe, yeah.
That is true.
It could have been very, very beneficial. I just I think that this reaffirms that Stoner Movie Step Timber is absolutely coming back.
I like Step Timber. That's my favorite month.
It's
you get out your step ladders and just climb up
September,
and down.
September. September. That's when your month marries a new month, and you get this whole new family of months. That's your September month.
You're not my real month.
I don't love you anymore. You're not my real month. I don't have to listen to you.
I think September is a lot better to say than Stoner September.
Stoner's
a little less of a mouthful.
That works too. I like that. We'll see how it goes out if we remember next year what we're talking about. What the fuck are we talking about now? Let's fucking rein this in. We're going to talk about The Thing. But before we do that, Ryan has proposed a question for us. Mm. Ryan, would you drop this knowledge on us, please?
Yeah. So in the spirit of our horror month, and since we do video games and movies both, I want to know, actually more so, I want to have you pitch a horror movie to become a horror game,
mm-hmm.
and kind of describe the mechanics, and you can, you know, liken it to other game mechanics, use like ideas from other things, but it doesn't matter if it's already been a game that movie has. as long as you do something different.
Okay.
That's it.
And you feel very confident that you're the winner.
Yes.
So I'm going to let you go last.
Thank you.
I think that's very fair.
I think that makes sense.
And because I've known about this question longer than Brooks, I will go ahead and I'll go first and give you a bit of time to maybe think a little more.
Very judicious.
Because I have my answer.
I have mine as well.
Okay, you do? Okay.
But I'll let you go ahead and go first as guest. I'm tossing that privilege over to you.
All right. Well, we'll just go down the line. So I thought about it for a little bit, and I was going to come with two, but I think I narrowed it down. And the one I would go with, it's not a great horror movie, but I think as a game I could make a really cool concept out of it. And that is the movie The Cell with Jennifer Lopez and Vince Vaughn.
Okay.
Now, my reasoning here is because of the fact that in The Cell they go into different people's minds, I think that the gameplay is astronomical, and you can do a lot of weird, cool, unique things with that. You can go into different people and live out their nightmares in a sort of a Silent Hill-esque fashion with different creatures and different people. It's very similar also to a game that we will be doing, Psychonauts, in the very near future.
That's as soon as you said it, I was like, Psychonauts, but
with
scary.
A lot darker tone. Mm-hmm. Much more like the Milkman level, which is just very
creepy.
Odd. Yes.
Quirky, weird.
So like that, but cranked up to 11 and with some different people. It doesn't have to follow the story, especially at this point in time. I would picture it being a third-person action-adventure with some puzzle. Again, very Silent Hill-esque, but maybe also to mix it up because you're going into different people's minds and horrors and nightmares. Maybe some of them are in first-person or things like that. Like the gameplay styles could change based on who you're in their dreams or whatever.
Like you could go into like a nerdy character's mind and it's like an old 8-bit video game.
Yeah,
or
anything like that. I think that would be a really cool idea. And so that is my pitch, The Cell in that style. That's what I got.
I like it.
Okay.
I like it.
All right, good. I'm glad to hear that. Brooks, what do you got, buddy?
Okay, so since they've already technically made this game or made a version of this game, but I would think another kind of The Thing would be a good move, good game.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I think we're going to pitch the same game.
Probably. I was thinking more of like a multiplayer-esque game.
So like Dead Rising 3? Or not Dead Rising 3, although that too, but what is the one with the fucking space shit? Dead Space.
Dead Space.
Dead Space 3.
Kind of, but I was thinking more I can't talk now too either. This is contagious, Kyle.
It is. I have the worst effect.
No, I was thinking more along the lines of a multiplayer game, say like, you know, almost strictly at this point.
Like Evolve.
Yeah, kind of like Evolve, except you start off with, say, 10 people, and you're in a relatively enclosed space. I heard a damn it over here, so I think...
No, it's very close, but they're going to be different games.
Okay. One person starts off as The Thing, but no one knows
who that is. Of course, except for that person.
Except for that person.
Yeah.
And the whole concept is for that person to infect everybody without them knowing.
That concept I do like. I like the idea of one. It's like a murder mystery game.
Kind of.
Where you get a card, and one person has the card that says you're the killer. But you've got to play it off and try to infect as many as possible.
I think I've seen a Garry's Mod version. Something similar to this before. I think I saw something on a YouTuber doing something similar.
Okay.
But I thought, you know, that would be a really great concept for an actual Thing multiplayer game. I did play the single player game when it came out.
Which I do want to talk to you more about once we get into the actual.
And it wasn't too bad at that time. So
that's good to hear.
Here's my thing, like, with multiplayer horror games, I don't feel that they're ever horror games. I think they can work. I just don't think that they have fully worked.
Left 4 Dead. I think Left 4 Dead worked.
You think? I don't ever remember feeling scared, per se, in Left 4 Dead.
I guess more panicked. Overwhelmed and...
Yeah. Panicked, I could see. And like Resident Evil 5, like you're never worried, especially if you're playing with somebody, because you're cracking jokes the whole time. Like,
Here's a bit of a rebuttal to that, though, is like one of the Ryan, you've played Left 4 Dead, right?
Oh, yeah.
One of the most satisfying feelings of that game, even though it's not necessarily scary, it's more panicky. But it's like, I can't believe I just survived that feeling. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that I think that really kind of qualifies, because it's not necessarily, it's, I mean, it is, you know, with the zombies and everything, a horror game. But, you know, it's also survival. You've got to survive this.
And it, you know, it forces teamwork, which, yeah. I mean, there could be some good ways that, like, you do this. But, you would really want to focus on, like, mm-hmm. Like some sort of communication. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that there is, I have played a similar game to almost what you're describing before. It's on Steam. I believe it's just called Haunted House.
Huh.
I've played it with Andy and Casey. Casey, former guest of the show. But you go in there with, like, 10 people. And at the start, one person is randomly selected to be a killer monster, and they can pick to be like a werewolf, a killer clown. They get to pick what they want to be. And then your goal as the other 10 people are to like find these keys and try to escape the house while this thing is hunting you. And if it kills you, you become a ghost. And then as a ghost, you can fuck with the other people.
I think I saw the concept of that game when I think it was one of those Steam Greenlight games, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah.
I remember putting that on my list, and I just don't remember looking it up after that, see how far it had gotten.
Like, some of the monsters can turn invisible. Like, there's a baby ghost killer thing that can go invisible and then pop out. It's got jump scares when you kill people. It's kind of fun. But, yeah, I would check out the game just based on the fact that it's also got the Thing tie-in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess, Ryan, let's hear what you got. It's apparently very similar.
Yeah, so I was also going to do a game based on the Thing. So, bollocks, but I will say it's different because it would be single player only, no multiplayer. The difference is, unlike the third person action shooter game that we got in The Thing for the Xbox and PS2 generation, you are the monster. And you start off the game with one life, and you have to slowly sneak around and like isolate people one by one, much like Batman in the Arkham Knight series. And they also have like terrified, like, meters, and as it raises, like, they make stupid decisions, so you gotta kind of position yourself to terrify them, whether it be like make noise or run past them real quick. And then once they get terrified, then they go isolated, and then you find them and assimilate. Once you assimilate, you can make two things, so then your lives go up for each person you do.
Okay.
And
I like that
idea. As you go along, there's a certain number, let's say 15 or 20. It'd be like a 3 to 4 hour game. It wouldn't be very long, but that's fine. But you would go after, like, say, 5 survivors, you would essentially get bottlenecked into a cutscene where it becomes a quick time event, like a Telltale game, where you are one of the doppelgangers and you have to lie your way out. And if you don't, you immediately just lose that life. But that kind of gives you, like, the dialogue tree to kind of pretend and fake your way into it or not. But it gives you the intense, like, drama of the Thing, which is, like, the people in a room and they don't know who to trust. But I think also give you the power to be the monster and just like, man, we can do it. We can do that effect too with like the creatures from Bloodborne are very thing-like.
As it goes
maybe
on,
tweaked up a little bit more. But like we have the technology to do that. And I think there is an audience because of alien isolation. Like people will buy these like smaller games that focus on horror.
As long as they're well done, yeah.
Yeah,
and are true to the source material. I think that's
kind of what it would be.
Isolation's biggest pull is that you feel like you're in the alien universe, like you're on the Nostromo. Mm-hmm.
That had to have been one of the best survival horror games I've ever played.
That game is so fucking good. Did you start off playing on hard?
Yes.
I did
and
too.
I got.
It's so fucking hard.
I was
after
so
a point. Yeah.
tense after playing a lot of that.
I can only play it in short bursts, man. It takes a toll.
I tend to only play that like. You know, after my kids go to bed, so it's already nighttime.
Already dark, and then you put the headphones in.
Yeah, because that's about the only way you can play that game, because you've got to hear everything.
All right, so I don't know if we can pick a winner here. Do we want Andrew to pick, or should we do a community pick here? Andrew's giving me the disdainful look, so I think we let the community decide here.
Sound engineer Andy may have not listened to all of it.
It's very possible.
Is what I think
happened. I wasn't going to call him out. I was just going to let him skate by on this one for sure. So, I put it to you, the listeners. Of the three games pitched to you, what would you prefer to play? And maybe we'll tell people who wins, but I'm curious to know myself.
Just fun. Just for funds.
Who would you pick to play? So... There we go. That's a good question, Ryan. I enjoyed that.
That was a good question.
I thought it was kind of funny you both went for The Thing.
Yeah, well, it was as I was watching the movie, I was like, oh my God, you could do this game really well.
So speaking of other horror games, you know they're making a Friday the 13th game.
Yeah, Adam Sessler is behind the development.
He's involved. He's like a producer, I believe.
Is it going to be any better than the NES version?
Well, yes. In this game, you are Jason. Okay. And you do, of course, super gory kills based on what weapons and what environments you encounter the campers in. And the other people play the campers, and they've got to escape you.
It's another asymmetric multiplayer game.
Yeah. And I actually had an idea for one of those style games at one point, too. It was very similar to Evolve before Evolve came out, and then I was kind of crushed when Evolve came out, and it kind of flopped as hard as it did. But mine, it wasn't a team hunting monsters. Mine was like, it was like a five-player multiplayer game, a team of four versus a team of one, and the team of one was like a big jungle cat, like a tiger or a lion or a jaguar, and you pick it. And then the team of five would be like a pack of hyenas.
Oh, okay.
And so they like battle, and of course the big cat is very strong, but if the hyenas work together, they can overpower the big cat. I thought it was a cool idea, and then like a month later, Evolve gets shown off, and I was like, well, fuck, there that goes.
You know, the same concept would work very well for a Predator game.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, I like the idea of being a big cat, and the fact that you could be different types of big cat. Like, skin customization was a big thing for me, you know, and the hyenas could all look different and unique, and maybe throw a Lion King skin in there for pre-orders. I don't know. That's where I went. I spent a lot of time, like I think most nerds, designing games and then never seeing them go anywhere.
But. Did you guys ever play the old Sega Genesis game Poltergeist or The Haunting with Poltergeist?
I did not, no.
No.
It's like a top-down Diablo 2 like kind of isometric view, but you're like a ghost and you go around into a house and you possess things to scare the family out of the houses.
That was a Genesis game?
Yeah, and you could jump into like a buzzsaw and then like use the buzzsaw and go around the room.
Because they do that. They made one of those for like the Wii.
Oh, it might be something similar. But yeah, it was like an old Genesis game.
Wow.
Yeah. But you could do that with Cabin in the Woods and get access to like every monster ever.
Cabin in the Woods would be a good one too to just make a game out of, I feel. Because all the different monster types would lend to a great of... bunch of
so much variety, yeah.
Variety, that's the word I'm looking for.
I hear it's the spice of life.
It's what people tell me, but I don't listen to people. I make my own way.
Those people are wrong. Yeah. It's sriracha. That's what the hipsters have told me.
Sriracha or Frank's Red Hot, which is not really hot at all.
No. No.
But I'll use it when it's free.
It's the worst.
Not a big Frank's Red Hot fan.
No, I'm not a big Tibet. I don't know. I don't want to get diverged on hot sauce. We can talk about hot sauce later.
Let's talk about the thing.
Let's talk about the thing, Brooks. We got a bumper.
We do.
Before we get to the thing. I remembered, motherfuckers. So this okay, before we get to the bumper, the music in this movie was composed by Ryan.
Ennio Morricone.
Who is one of the great composers, I would say.
Yeah, that's fair.
A lot of people looked at him. I was really surprised. I always thought John Carpenter did the music for this movie because he always does the music for his movies a lot. But the fact that he got Morricone is really cool. I mean, the most recent one he did was, of course, The Hateful Eight with Tarantino.
Which he won.
I think he came out of retirement to do that too because he hasn't done anything for a long time. And Tarantino somehow convinced him to come out. Coincidentally, movie also stars Kurt Russell. So I would like to throw out that I'm going to envelop it. This is a tribute to Dave from Tadpog. He has requested that this be included in Russell Fest, which has been continuing this year. He started it. We can totally throw this into Russell Fest because it stars Kurt Russell. And
it's a really good Kurt Russell movie, too.
Yeah, it's one of the all-time greats. So let's go in. We're going to talk about it right after this bump. Thank you. right, so we are back. And I'm ready to get in and just start talking about this fucking movie, man. I think almost anybody who likes movies in general and horror movies specifically, like The Thing is one of the most highly regarded movies ever. It's definitely a game changer.
It's like an American Werewolf in London before it. It took special effects at that time, practical special effects, and jumped it up.
Dude, just so fucking
ridiculously.
It also, like, what makes it stand out from other horror movies is that it doesn't rely on jump scares. It doesn't rely on. Mm-hmm. It's all like a build.
It's an extremely cerebral movie.
Yes, it plays on a lot of base human fears, such as isolation and this overwhelming force that is completely you can't understand it, and let alone understand it, how do you stop it, and the overwhelming ramifications of if it reaches humanity as a whole. Like, it's got a chance here that it's isolated, but then again, how will anybody believe what you say or take it seriously?
Yeah, it's like, one of the themes throughout the movie is who can you trust?
Yeah.
Who's not a creature? Who is a creature? You don't know.
Well, not only who can you trust, these are people you know. You are isolated with them for months at a time. You should be very familiar with them. And then to have that all taken away is such a crazy concept. Like, It's a movie that you really have to do a little work for and put yourself in that situation, I think, for it to really have an effect. It's not something you just throw on and something jumps at the screen and and then that's it. It's a lot more of a psychological almost that stays with you after the movie's over. Like, you disagree?
I disagree a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, that's part of it. Sure, that's there, but if you want a psychological movie, you watch The Exorcist. If you want a psychological movie, you watch Amityville Horror or Rosemary's Baby, like those types of movies where it is like a slow build up and it is like very, very focused on the characters. The Thing has that, but its focus is also like the gore effects and creature stuff. Yeah. And like, you don't have to, you can go into this movie with just wanting to be entertained with just a spectacle, and that's there too.
It totally works on that level.
I believe Roger Ebert called this movie a barf bag film.
Specifically, why was that?
Due to all the gory effects and everything else.
It's rough. Like, today, like most, if not all, of the effects still hold up, or at the very least, are disturbing looking.
So here's one point that I think I can put some input on, because I watched this movie with previous guest Casey for his very first time. And I will tell you, there was one point at the movie he actually laughed at, and it caught me off guard. And that part is still amazing. And I don't think the part that he laughed at was when they're doing the blood test. And I think, is it Windows? Or not Windows, but the other guy that has short curly hair.
Yeah.
He transforms.
Oh yeah.
And he flops up to the ceiling. But that part made him laugh. Like, because I don't know.
It kind of defies physics a little bit. Like the jump from the chair to the ceiling just looks weird.
And you can tell that it's
somebody dropped something reversed. A body on the floor, but then made it look like the ceiling.
It's one of those that doesn't work so well.
I agree, but like everything else in that sequence
was I'd say that was probably the worst thing in the film.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Everything else, though, was really good.
I
didn't think they laughed after the guy's head split apart and chomped on Windows' head.
I was going to say, that's the one thing I noticed that I kind of giggle at, is like when that head chomping does, like immediately it's like, holy shit, like that's crazy. And then you see like the really obviously fake body like in the mouth
being slung around. Yeah, that part is another one that didn't really affect him like it did me when I was younger and I saw this movie for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's one of those things that's going to show its age. But for the most part, all these special effects do not show an age. Like, And no. That's why I really love practical effects over CGI, because they still age so well. Like we talked about in American Werewolf, that transformation scene still looks fucking great today.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you can see your money on the screen. Like, yeah. It just looks.
You're getting what you paid for.
You are. And
I think even more so, like, people who saw this in theaters in 1982, like, they got more than what they paid for because they had no idea what this was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, at the time, the transformations had been like a frame by frame change that you can kind of see superimposing over each other.
Yeah, like the Wolfman.
Yeah.
The mm-hmm. original Universal 50s picture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't see this movie in theaters, but when I saw it, the internet wasn't huge at the time, but I knew, so I didn't see pictures of what the things were, and there were, of course, were no videos, no YouTube, but I did, you know, frequent film boards and stuff, and mm-hmm. people always talked about The Thing, and I was like, well, I should see this movie, and so I was caught completely off guard when I saw this movie, and seeing it fresh is something crazy, but it's one of those rare movies that gets better, I feel, every time you watch it. It is still enjoyable. I've seen this movie so many times. It is hands down my favorite horror movie, me personally.
It's a movie I love, and I know I love, and I know it's great, but like I can never bring myself to watch it. Like it's I have access to it. Mm-hmm. I'm never in the mood to watch The Thing.
You do have to be in a mood.
But as soon as it's on, I'm there. Like, I don't want to stop. Like, it has my full attention. I don't know what that says about the movie, but
I don't know. That kind of puts it in the ranking like I had an American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, it's like, it's a great movie. I may not watch it all the time, but at the same time, though, if it's on TV and I see that it's there, I was like, oh, hey, change channel. Now I'm stuck there for an hour and... What, 48 minutes? I don't remember.
Yeah. And this is another one like American Werewolf that is just timed so well. Like, its pacing is perfect. It starts you off with the dog in the helicopter, which, for the record, John Carpenter, like, has such an eye for widescreen. Like, his framing of that opening helicopter dog chase is fantastic and looks better than, like, you mentioned Hateful Eight, and, like, it's kind of what I thought when I started watching this, because I forgot Ennio Morricone did the music. So I saw that and I was like, oh, okay, Ennio Morricone. Obviously, Tarantino, Hateful Eight. And then you start with like the whole white opening, like Hateful Eight. I'm like, I think this looks better than what Tarantino shot in the Hateful Eight, these opening scenes.
Yeah.
And that's 40 years before the time.
Well, and it starts off with a bang, literally, because, I mean, there's gunshots and there's excitement right off the bat, whereas Hateful Eight... is that long, slow build. It's a long,
2 hours.
Shot.
Yeah. 2 hours till you get to something. Unless you like, you know, women getting hit with comical sound effects, because you get that for the entire movie.
I'm in love with Kurt Russell in both these movies. I think he's the best part.
I think Kurt Russell's the best part in most movies he's in.
And it's really crazy because, man, that guy is just, he's like Michael Keaton, like.
He can do just about anything.
Fantastic.
He can be a villainous character, and he can be, you know, your, you know, white meat hero kind of character,
and the sarcastic, and he could just white be red dude that just and is throwing
he's just
quips.
There
yeah,
you know, in some movies like in Big Trouble in Little China,
yeah,
you know, he's not the main hero for that movie.
Captain Ron
man, that's I love that movie.
Overboard,
yeah,
my wife's favorite one. Kurt Russell movie, I think
he's in
that's
fucking,
a good one.
He's in Stargate,
yeah.
Let's not forget Furious 7. He is hands down the best part of the Fast and the Furious franchise, and he's only in it for like 10 minutes.
I watched a whole bunch of shit on all the Fast and Furious movies the previous couple days. I had no idea he was in that movie.
If you've not seen any, just watch it. Just like, because it's the one where Paul Walker gets his send off because he dies.
Well, he died like through the filming.
Yes.
So like,
yeah. So they do a whole big thing with Paul Walker, and that's handled very well. And it's like, watch this movie to see how to handle actors leaving or suddenly not being able to make it, because they did it very tastefully. But Kurt Russell is in it, and he knows what movie he's in.
It's a paycheck.
It's no. It's not a paycheck. It's not like Harrison Ford showing up to anything in the last 20 years. It is a man who is like there to have fun and enjoy himself and really bring something new to it. Like,
oh, okay. Well, outside of bringing something new, it's very similar to Sean William Scott.
A little bit, yeah, like how you're talking about in that movie. But he plays like a smarmy CIA agent who may or may not be helping. And like, he gets it. He gets what to do. And that's just Kurt Russell in any movie. Like, he knows what to do and what to bring. As you said, he can play hero or villain. But like, even as a villain, like, it's not somebody I love to hate. Like, I'm still like, that dude's right. Like, right on, man. Like, I'll agree with his villainous side, like, in anything. Like, he's just likable.
Yeah.
He's so likable.
Yeah. I agree.
This is the Kurt Russell podcast.
It's Russell Fest. Kurt
Russell now.
Russell Fest. Russell Fest. It's so good. We already hinted at it. It's Russell Fest for sure.
He's going to be a planet in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
I wish.
No, he is. He's going to be a planet.
I thought he was just the dad.
He's Ego, the living planet.
Oh, fair
enough.
He's
taking form as Kurt Russell. Okay. And I hope, because I'm sorry, I'm going off the rails here.
No, it's fine.
But because Guardians of the Galaxy has that very 80s vibe, because mm-hmm. that's where Peter Quill was, that's his childhood. I hope that the planet just takes the form of somebody from his childhood, Kurt Russell, like as like Snake Plissken, the 80s action star. Done really.
Or Big Trouble in Little China. Yeah, I love that. Any part of that.
Be Jack Burton.
Yeah, with the cut-off white shirt.
Yeah.
It'd be great. And he has a submachine gun, like a little Mac-10.
Yeah, the little tiny one.
Man, I will tell you, very similar to the movie House, if we're talking horror movies, the fucking monster in Big Trouble in Little China scares the shit out of me still. Like, the big hairy one that's like a Sasquatch. I don't know why, but something about it freaks me the fuck out.
Would it be the eyes?
Okay.
It might be. I don't know. And maybe like the sounds that it makes. I'm not.
Yeah.
Not the floating head thing, which is obviously an inspiration for the monsters in Doom.
The eyes of that little Sasquatch monster thing.
And he shows up at the end and it freaks me the fuck out. I just don't like it. I don't like it at all. Bothers me. And if you've ever seen the movie House, like.
Yes. That's actually one of my other.
It's like, a great movie.
It's a good one.
The ex-wife monster in that, or the girlfriend monster, fuck that thing, man. The way it talks and the way it looks and everything, just nope. Scared me as a kid, still scares me now. I'm not a part of it, no. Walking away, can't watch it. I can't even look at pictures of it on the internet. It fucking bothers me so bad. For real.
Okay.
But that's not this movie. We got to talk about The Thing, man.
Yeah.
So, we're rambling because it's so hard to say things about this movie that haven't been said infinite amount of times. Again, this is such a well-loved movie. But I want to get maybe more of the personal feelings. Like, do you remember the first time that you saw this movie, Ryan and Brooks?
You can go ahead first.
One of the first times I've watched this movie, it was with my dad and my older brother. Us three in particular, are big fans of horror movies.
Okay, yeah.
So we watch anything scary all the time. I was introduced to, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers at a very, very early age.
My mom loved horror movies,
five and earlier. So this movie I got introduced to, I can't remember when, but it left such an impact on me that, it's like the part I have a slight inherent fear of giving someone a defibrillation.
I could tell
it's like, I'm like, is his chest going to open up and bite my arms off? I don't know.
That scene and like when the doctor is screaming and like the look on his face. I mean, that was actually a prosthetic face. I don't know if you guys know this.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually because
they
brought in an amputee, a guy that actually had missing arms. So they made a prosthetic mask of that guy and a scream. And that's why it's so off-putting, because it's like a fake face and it's moving around. And it sticks with you.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And that's why his face is in that grimace and he's got the yell over it. But that's why that scene specifically is so off-putting to you, because it's that uncanny valley.
I thought it was like bad dubbing. Like they had to redo the screen later in post.
It's a totally different guy.
Okay.
With the mask of that guy on his face.
Or the limbs. Oh,
yeah. Interesting.
Fucking brilliant.
Yeah. It's wild, right?
Yes.
So I love that part. Like
that whole scene there was actually really good, especially the part where, they light that body on fire too.
Well, I like,
and then you see the head just trying to escape.
And then Russell has that fantastic line of, "You gotta be fucking kidding me."
I don't think that was Kurt Russell. That was
the stoner.
Yeah, is it?
That was yeah. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I thought that was Kurt Russell that says it. No. And then he blasts it.
It's a stoner.
No, oh, it's well, yeah, it's a stoner.
I stand corrected. You got still a great line.
It is.
Me. Still a great. And then they, of course, roast it. But man, well,
here's a good Kurt Russell moment. Like the very opening when you're establishing the characters, you see him playing the computer chess. And he thinks he's gonna win.
I just saw this again today.
I know I'm it's so good. I forgot about the scene, but like it's I don't know how it's so good. But so he's like all cocky, like he just won, and then the computer's like checkmate, and he just silently opens up the computer and pours all his scotch into it, and the computer shorts out and just like that's it. Like that's your introduction to this character, and you're like I'm on his team. Like I get it.
And don't forget the line, cheating bitch.
Yep, that's right.
Well, and I you know of course. I watch a lot of things about this movie because I love this movie. And there's this channel that showed this great parallel that after that scene, the rest of the movie, Kurt Russell is playing a long chess game against the thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where he's using his other comrades as almost pawns at certain points and trying to figure things out. And it's this elaborate game and trying to, you know, win the other opponent's pieces and take the day. So
it's a clever little foreshadow.
Yes,
almost. Okay. Yeah,
thank you.
Allegorical foreshadow. It's not literal. Yeah, foreshadow.
I made the connection this last time I had watched it because I was kind of looking for, you know, since I've been listening and, you know, watching you guys do this kind of thing and doing it myself with the American Werewolf in London, I put that on, put my critiquing glasses, as Ryan calls them, and I was just like, whoa, I did not catch that the first time I'd ever watched this, you know, when I watched this film in my adult life until recently. I was like, wow, that's a really good foreshadowing technique there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because mm-hmm. you know, like you said, he's playing a human game of chess.
This movie also has Wilford Brimley, and I think yes. his most badass role ever.
I never thought I would see the Quaker oatmeal guy.
And the diabetes guy.
Yeah, the diabetes guy.
That's how I know him, yeah.
Cussing up a storm, shooting a gun, and swinging a pickaxe at people.
At fucking, like, not only at people, but he destroys a whole bank of recording equipment or, you know.
Servers or radios something.
And stuff. So I guess my first big question, I'll start framing the rest of the episode this way. At that point when he is flipping out, do you think he has been assimilated or not?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Neither of you think so?
No, I think it was a very human reaction. He is freaking out, and he wants everybody to stay and not let this thing get out. I think he is acting heroically almost, but in a very backwards way. Like, he is not communicating himself effectively at all.
Yep.
But, no, he is definitely doing the right thing, and then...
He is the first one to get what's going on, mm-hmm. And he's the first one to try to isolate himself, which kind of makes him go, you know, it makes him paranoid and crazy. And you see, I fully don't believe he was assimilated until later on when he comes to check on, or when MacReady comes to check on
him.
And
he wants to be let out.
That's when he was, you know, that's when you know he was assimilated. Because you see the noose sitting there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about, yeah.
And he says he's better. And the noose isn't hanging up, it's, you know, on the table. And it's like, well, why did he have the noose? But he says he's better now. Mm-hmm. Did he know something and all of a sudden it's, you know, not him anymore? So,
and that's one of the strengths of this movie, and I think one of the strengths of John Carpenter in general is he doesn't have to overstate things, because you have these questions, like, as an audience, you don't have to see every single person who is assimilated into the thing. You don't have to see the scene where they would get, like, taken over by the monster. You see it, like, maybe once or twice. But otherwise, like, the movie leaves it up to you as an audience to piece together the clues, and it treats you like you're a smart audience, and that's always, like, I welcome that.
Yeah, because, you know, viewing it for, like, the first time or something, you really don't know mm-hmm. who's the thing and who's not. You're just as surprised as everyone else with the blood testing as to who changes and who's not.
All right, so I've seen this movie, like, 5 or 6 times, And, like, even this last time, like, I still thought the colonel was going to do it. Like, in the blood testing, like, I was like, that colonel, he's definitely it. Like, and I can never, like, get that straight. Like,
oh, you think that he's going to be the one? Oh, yeah, that's like,
he's
the one.
He's it's him. It's obviously the colonel.
I always forget that the guy who's with the dogs is not assimilated. And that always kind of bothers me, to be honest. I always feel like he should have been
assimilated.
Yeah. I think it's kind of I think that they don't do it to show that Kurt Russell is not afraid to kill anybody, even if they're not, even if they, but like, I don't know, the alone time that he has with the original thing, like, it would have assimilated him, I feel. And so that brings me to my next question. The first thing that the dog does assimilate, we don't know who it is, we get a shadow. But I'm curious who you guys think that that is.
I think it was the stoner.
That's who I think it was, too. I think it was the stoner guy, because we just see the shadow on the wall.
And the profile, the silhouette kind of fits his frame and his hairstyle a little bit.
I think it has to be, yeah.
I always, it always makes you think it's the stoner or maybe Windows.
But Windows was tested, though.
Yeah, and he was never assimilated.
Yeah.
So it has to be the stoner.
That's what I think, too.
Windows was the second person to be tested, because MacReady tests himself first.
Yeah, because everybody flips out and thinks that MacReady's infected, because the thing is of thinking... What I want to say, not parasite. I guess I could say a thinking parasite.
It would technically be a parasite.
It understands that MacReady is its number one foe, so it tries to set him up early,
which is smart.
Yeah,
the cat and mouse between the thing and MacReady.
Yeah,
is like really smart. Like nobody, the thing is making really intelligent moves, but like the humans are making really good moves. There's one, which we can talk about later, that I think is like a really dumb move.
Okay. I'm curious to hear what that is.
Like 95% of like their logic is like so sound in this movie.
Yeah. Giles he's kind of playing devil's advocate to this movie. You can kind of see that he's not doing that for the sake of being contentious. Mm-hmm. You know, he's genuinely just as concerned about everything else, you know, especially after they, what's the part where after the dogs, I think, and after they get Blair, which is the crazy guy.
Yeah.
Locked him up. Wilford Brimley. Yeah. After they get him locked up, you know, he's just as concerned who's human.
Yeah.
You know,
who is fucking Keith David. What is his character's name?
Giles.
He's Giles. Okay. Yes. Okay. Because I want to bring this up later. But I guess I'll go ahead and bring it up now. Like Giles' central theme is self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
And like you notice that with when Kurt Russell, or I'm sorry, MacReady, has gone to check out his own cabin because he saw the light on and he says, I know I left that light off. When he gets separated from the cook and the cook comes back first and he brings MacReady's shirt that the thing had used to sabotage him, Giles doesn't want to let MacReady in. And he doesn't let him in because he doesn't know. And that's a good move. But that shows that Giles is concerned with the self-preservation of the group. He doesn't make rash decisions, which I feel is going to come back later on, which we'll get to.
Okay.
I'm just keeping it out there.
Yeah.
I forget what point you were going for, Brooks.
Well,
sorry.
So the point is that, you know, you have Giles is, or at least, you know, portrayed as thinking an extremely survival oriented. And so he's trying to preserve every person there that he knows is human at that point. You know, he's not sure about MacReady, especially after they bring back the shirt. Locking MacReady out, you know, in terms of a survival situation with something like that, that, you know, they're not 100% sure who's human, who's not, you know, was a smart decision in my book.
I agree, too. It's what you got to do, especially before MacReady comes in and develops the test, which is great.
Yeah.
And I like how when he develops the test, as it goes on, they still don't trust MacReady, even though he went first, because it's not shown any results. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they start to get a little fed up with the whole thing. Until it, of course, finally shows results.
just the way that scene is shot too is so tense and well done, because you see them go through was like three files, three or four. And then like the fourth one is where it finally jumps, and like the build up, and then that release is so quick. It is immediately as it goes down, like it shoots up, and then like all hell breaks loose with like the guy in the chair still, but so well done.
And it really, like, I like MacReady when he finally gets back in. He's taking a no-nonsense approach to the same way that Giles is, but he takes it like, he grabs dynamite and he's like, I will take all of you fucking guys out. I don't care.
He has dynamite and a flare, and the flare's already lit.
Yeah, he's so. Like, but I am not one of these things, and I can prove it, and I will show you how. But if you don't let me.
That's so good.
Yeah.
It's like, I know I'm human, and I know some of you are, because otherwise you have all just come at me. So let's think this through. And like, the level of thought in that one sentence is more than I've seen like other movies do. Like, there are body snatcher movies, because this is essentially a body snatcher movie. Like The Faculty. Like, I enjoyed The Faculty. There's more thought in that one sentence than in the entirety of The Faculty.
True. Yeah. It's like you said earlier. They don't take for granted. They don't think that the audience is stupid in any way. Mm-hmm. So they make the characters. They're not. I mean, there's some that make, you know, a couple slightly questionable decisions. Mm-hmm. But those are mistakes the everyday person would make. But everyone else there is making, some fairly good decisions.
For the most part, I'll just go ahead into like the one glaring like dumb decision is like.
Okay.
We're down to the final four. We're going to take three people out to the shed and leave Keith David by himself. It's like, you've learned at this point, two and two. Like, you don't need three people to go up. You have two, and then you don't have the confusion of where were you at your post. You were gone. The thing only attacks one-on-one. This line has been brought up.
Mm-hmm. So here's, okay, so I'm going to bring it back now. So the ending, we are left with Giles and MacReady.
Mm-hmm.
It never fully states who is who, what is what.
Mm-mm.
What do you guys think is what?
Well, MacReady is definitely human.
Mm-hmm.
He is definitely human. And you've played the video game, and it seems like that colored...
I don't think the video game is canon. I don't think it can be considered canon.
Yeah, I'm willing... Even though John Carpenter did provide a voice... Yes. Or a character of the game.
I don't think it's.
I don't think it would be considered canon as well.
I think it's an alternate universal telling.
Yeah.
But
so my thought is that they are both human.
I think Giles is the thing, and
I lean more towards Brooks.
I have some reasonings myself to back it up based on previous evidence in the movie. So as I said earlier. Giles' number one thing is self-preservation. But when we see Giles from their point of view, he is running outside by himself, says that he's chasing Blair. But we know Blair is still downstairs in the room with them because he turns into the giant monster and has that great scene where he sticks his fingers in the colonel's face. Mm-hmm. I think Giles has been assimilated already, and that's why he's running away, to preserve himself. So that no matter what goes down, because we know that the thing doesn't mind the cold. It can stay frozen for a long time and still be effective.
Yeah.
And that's why it's running away, because it has infected Giles.
I will counter one of those points, which is when we see the person running, do we know who it is?
The only person left is Giles.
You think, unless it is...
Or unless it is Blair.
Unless it is also Blair. Unless we don't see Giles, but we just see Blair running.
We get to see them in a darker colored coat, which Giles has. And when we see Blair again, he doesn't have a coat.
Maybe he took it off when he got inside.
That's very possible. Maybe. But I'm just saying it's not the evidence that I saw, and I was taking it a different way this time. Again, mm-hmm. I put on those very hardcore critiquing spectacles, as we call them, or whatever we do call them. That's the way that I think Giles is a thing, and I think Kurt Russell knows it, and he kills him or gets killed by the thing.
I think you definitely have a case and have evidence for it.
My other purpose for that is the camera pan when we see that Giles is missing from his post. Now, I don't think Giles would abandon his post,
mm-hmm.
because he is the last line of defense for that room. He knows how important that would be. I don't see him running off and chasing Blair for a shot in the dark. He would wait and inform the other people when they come back if it was really Giles. And the fact that when it pans through, it just stops and it just shows that there's nothing there. I think that's an indication that Giles has left for reasons beyond him, because it's not him.
So some of the other things that you will notice to counter this a little bit is when they get when they're moving the dead bodies that they got from the Norwegian site.
Mm-hmm.
Windows leaves. I can't remember the other guy's name, but leaves one guy in the room with the two frozen bodies, and the one comes back to life.
Mm-hmm.
You see traces of blood and clothes when he got attacked. You don't see that.
With Giles?
With Giles.
Here's the thing. There is also evidence that Giles is wearing a different coat at the end. It's hard to tell because of the flames and that it's dark. But Giles appears to be wearing a brownish or lighter colored coat than the dark blue he's worn throughout the rest of the movie. Now, and that is another indication that a transformation has taken place and ripped up his previous clothing, and he's changed jackets.
I will say you have thoroughly convinced me. You have thoroughly convinced me. But I am going to put out devil's advocate. Like,
yeah, please do. You think
this is just like a production oversight?
It could very well be. It could very well be. But in a movie so concerned with playing these things and showing you things, I feel that it's more of a deliberate move. But that's
it
me.
It does have that. I like but it. Does have that Here's feel. I do like.
I'm
I
on board.
When you guys watch it again, I want you to pay attention to those things. And
oh,
the fact,
I will now.
Yeah. Like, I think Giles is the thing. That's me. I also propose it to our listeners and our viewers who will now watch the thing or who have. I want to hear your input too. Am I wrong? Are they right? What's going on here? Do you think Giles is the thing at the end of the movie? Or
also,
is it two humans?
To reiterate, I am now on his team.
There we go,
I
buddy.
Agree with that, but
I'm still going to play skeptic on this.
Fair enough, and that's fine.
I am not going to say though, however, that you did not present a very good argument. You presented it very well.
It is
and
the number
it is
one
very,
question
very
in this
convincing.
Movie.
Yeah, it is the number one question in this movie, because at the end of the movie you just have Giles and MacReady as the explosions happened. You know, there's nothing left of the station. So there's nothing left but to pretty much freeze to death at that point. And, Giles explains his case. You know, he thought he saw Blair and ran off to, see if he could get him. And then, you can see they don't trust each other.
Yeah.
But MacReady's accepted, mm-hmm. What's happened and is confident that there's nothing else he could really do. So, I mean, the final line of the movie is like, let's see, what is it? It's just wait around a while and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Something along that vein, and then, a little bit of a wider shot and end of movie, which is really good because it leaves you wondering, like we just discussed, who was the thing? Mm-hmm. We're fairly certain MacReady's not.
Yeah, we're almost positive MacReady is not the thing. But we still don't
know. But then, because...
I don't think MacReady is the
thing. I don't think he is either, but at the same time, though, there's that little hint of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole premise of it is to mimic, what other people are supposed to be doing and survive.
From the get-go, or from the scene where he tests his own blood, I don't think he is alone again.
No, he's not. But you can kind of, again, like I said, you can play a little bit devil's advocate and see it from Giles' point of view, because he doesn't see MacReady the entire time.
Giles shows up and it's just
MacReady.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, and that's where I think that they're both human. That's where I kind of get my idea. But I am definitely going to look through again.
Yeah, please do.
And see that.
Winding down, I want to ask what you guys would choose as your favorite scene in the entire movie. And I would like to start with Brooks.
So my favorite scene of this movie would have to be, I really like the interrogation, like the, well, not interrogation, but the blood testing.
That's really good. Yeah.
It's, 'cause you don't, like, as a viewer, you don't know exactly who's who. Like I said, you're fairly certain MacReady's not, because while it's Kurt Russell, it's, you know, it's just who the actor is at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But you find out for sure who is at that point. So it was a really good scene, especially when the colonel, after he gets his blood tested, after everything that's happened, you know, because they test Giles to and gets him untied, and so the colonel's left there tied to the couch, and he's like, I know we've been through a lot already, or something like this, something like that. It's like, but could you, I don't want could to spend you? The entire fucking winter on this fucking couch.
Yeah.
Or something like
on
that.
On this fucking couch.
Yeah. It's very good. It was such yeah. a, it's just like, you can kind of see how they're really starting to get stressed, but you can also tell that there's some relief there,
mm-hmm.
that they know now who's who. But then after, shortly thereafter, it all goes to hell anyway.
I think I'll jump in here and then I'll let Ryan finish it up. I think
I don't want to pick the same scene you picked.
Fair enough. I think my favorite scene is the first transformation with the dogs in the pen. And and then when everybody runs in, and I love the fact that they don't immediately just start doing anything. They are fucking caught so off guard by this weirdness, and they have no, they're almost in shock.
The dog handlers, in fact, when he tells MacReady there's something weird in there, and I think it's pissed off.
Yeah. Well, because it's, you know, and then it gets into this monster guttural roar.
Shot that unnerves me is like the shooting the acid on that one dog, like almost like marking it. And yeah. like, I don't know, for some reason, like anytime I see something like that, it like takes me back to like the blob disintegrating or dissolving flesh. And it's like, I think it's really weird when the head splits.
And then it's the skull, and then the skull yeah. falls off, and it's got these weird flower tendrils things. That scene, and then a very, very close second is when they chase the bald guy out in the snow who didn't have a full chance to assimilate, and when they run him down, and he just lets out this
hands.
The hands and the and weird scream, yeah. man, that fucking scream and that howl. Yeah, dude, god damn, that's fucking unnerving.
Yeah,
but well,
it's the scene that they think that they finally figure out that shit's really going down.
Yeah. It's going after all of them. So those are my... I hope neither of those were yours, Ryan. And if they are, we can just get further in depth in them.
No. It was going to be between two, but since you didn't pick it, I think the showcase, it's the defibrillation and then the whole chaos that happens, because it is literally just like... It's upping the ante every minute yep. in that like 6-minute scene. Like, you're just like, holy shit. Holy shit. Oh my god. The head's fucking moving. What is that tongue doing? Oh my god. Yeah. And then you get that like brilliant line just like at the end, just like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so perfect. I love that scene. And it's I think the best use of effects in the movie. I think it's just the showcase.
Yeah.
Is that Nally and Brilliant?
I don't know. So the part where like the head is slowly ripping itself off and like the flesh is falling down
backwards off the table. It's, just
yeah, I agree. This movie is like, of course, all of the alien scenes are just so fucking crazy awesome. But
mm-hmm.
I think personally, this is John Carpenter's best film. It's my favorite movie from him. That's me. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, what would even be in the running?
In terms of John Carpenter yeah, films?
Yeah, for best John Carpenters, what do you put in the running?
Well, it depends. Because in terms of sci-fi, horror, / thriller...
He's had better performing movies, but I think yeah. as a director, this is his best work.
Did he direct Big Trouble in Little China?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
he sure did.
Yeah, so... See, those two movies, ironically, both also Kurt Russell's,
mm-hmm.
are... really up there for me. It just sort of depends on my mood.
Yeah, because they are so different.
They are so different movies.
They do one thing very specifically well, but they are very different things.
Exactly. Like, if I want, you know, a solid 80s action flick, I'm going Big Trouble, Little China every time.
And Big Trouble is also, it's more of a comedic horror. It's got a lot of lightness to it.
I wouldn't even classify that as a horror. I just kind of as a...
I only do because goddamn that fucking Sasquatch monster and... all that bullshit. But that's me.
I think it's more of an action comedy.
Yeah, I'd give it that.
But if I want, you know, a serious sci-fi thriller, yeah, Thing is going to win every time.
It's still, I watch this movie around this time every year. It's my favorite horror movie.
So. So this one, like, in terms of placement, this is like one of, this is definitely my top.
Okay.
I put it in my top 10 for sure. It didn't make my top 5. But it's in my top 10.
Well, you guys are both wrong, because John Carpenter's best movie is Ghost of Mars.
God damn it.
Best performance by Pam Grier.
And Ice Cube.
Zombie Monsters on Mars and Ice Cube. Fucking right, right? He was Triple X one time.
Yeah, and was it State of the Union?
State of the Union.
Oh my God, yeah. Come on.
No, it's... obviously, that's a joke. If you don't get that joke, watch Ghost of Mars and you'll get it.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie.
It's bad. But, I really think it's The Thing.
I do, too.
I think it's The Thing. And I love Big Trouble in Little China, but I think there might be better action comedies out there, like The Thing. Like, I don't know how many, like, horror movies like this are out there that are better.
That affect you on a level that this one does.
I think it has the best practical effects, gore effects, and God damn is this efficient movie making. Mm-hmm. Like, it's
the
so
only
good.
One I think could ever come reasonably close
would be
Alien.
Oh, I'm a little cold to Alien. I lean more towards Aliens.
I'm more of the Alien camp myself.
But. So, it depends on what I'm in the mood for, because I classify Aliens different than I classify Alien.
Aliens would classify more in Big Trouble, whereas Alien travels more in The Thing.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Agreed.
So,
that fucking fight at the end of Aliens.
Yeah.
Mm, top notch.
Totally.
Fucking top notch. But anyways, I think we've said everything that I wanted to say. Do you guys have anything else you want to throw in?
If you have not seen this movie.
Oh, yes.
And absolutely. I'm staring right at the camera as I say this. You must watch it. Yes. It is a fantastic movie. Brilliantly paced. Brilliantly cast. Every actor in that does their part very well. Mm-hmm. And it's just a smart movie. Like Ryan pointed out, no dumb decisions in terms of survival. I mean, rarely.
And just in filmmaking, it's perfectly. Paced.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, if that was a dumb decision, and now that I've heard Kyle's thing, now I think it's intentional and it adds to the brilliance of the movie.
Yeah. It does.
I do want you guys to, I just, you know, we didn't have to make it on the episode. I just want you guys to watch it again and talk to me about what you think about that now. So, that's just me.
I'm definitely going to do it again.
But there we go.
It could be. I will watch it again.
Again, Brooks, as always, we got to get you on the episodes more, man. You're such a fucking blast to have on here. We love it when you come on. I wish you would have worn your Imperial cap.
It's actually just sitting to the left of you.
Let me hand it to you.
Be my guest.
Brooks, like me and Ryan, is also a big Star Wars fan. I think we've already made plans to go see Rogue One, so yes. We should probably have Brooks on for that episode, I feel.
Do you have any lines like ready to go as like an Imperial officer that you can just say?
It's an older code, sir, but it checks out.
That's the fucking one I would have gone with, too. Fucking nice. All right. Perfect. Brooks, thank you as always, man. We always love having you on the show.
This is why we get them.
Let's give it a triple way Andre's cheer. Andre, thank you.
I've been drinking
as always. For the end, this is Brooks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And that's our show. Grind out.
Hi, this is Ryan, and if you liked what you just saw or listened to, please check us out at experiencegrind.com. Find us on facebook.com/experiencegrind, at Twitter, over at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast, where Kyle's tweeting out a lot of stuff all the time. And then you can always find us, our podcast, on iTunes, Stitcher, Twitch, or even on YouTube. Find us, just search Experience Grind Podcast. We don't have a channel yet, Stuff super easy to find. But please subscribe. We'll get there to you, make it even easier. And as always, if you like what you saw, we cover mini games and episodes every week. There's sure to be something you love. And as always, grind out.